You unlock this benefit with the key of Patreon. Beyond is another dimension. A dimension of thought. A dimension of speculation. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both waffle and substance. Of things and ideas. You've just crossed into the podcast zone. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Trekking Through the Twilight Zone. We're going to go through episode by episode through the entire series. We're in the middle of season two. And Julian, just one question. A penny for your thoughts. What are you thinking?
I'm sensing you're thinking, Julian's full of shit right now.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the episode A Penny for Your Thoughts. Just a quick, this one is the simplest one to explain, I think, in a very sort of simple way, is a bank teller or a bank employee, everyday bank employee, wanting on his way to work, buys a paper, and in doing so, throws his coins into the tray, and one of them lands edge up. A penny, I should say, lands edge up. And from that moment, and for the rest of the day, he is able to read the thoughts of those people around him. In doing so, he finds out that a woman he works with has feelings for him, his boss is having an affair, and that maybe the old man in the corner that's been working there for 20 plus years is planning on robbing the bank. First of all, this is a comedy. Let's be fair. This is one of those sort of comedy episodes that pops up throughout the series. But what are your first thoughts on this episode? Yeah,
I don't know if it's a comedy episode. I mean, it's a lighthearted episode. I mean, we've seen like real out and out comedy episodes. I mean, I feel like this is, it's one of those sort of like, not really like a thought experiment, but just, you know, it comes off as a light exploration of what might happen. And it doesn't take obviously the penny and the psychic thing too seriously. I mean, it does wrap up sort of nicely and everything's for the best. And, you know, I do like it though. I mean, I think it's good. It's solid work. It's certainly better than the movie What Women Want.
Yeah. Yes, that's actually a really good point. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that there's a wholesomeness to this episode that I do like, and the character, the bank teller who obviously sort of gets the powers, like he's actually quite enjoyable to watch. Like it's played in the right, it's the right side of it's the right side of slapstick. Let me put it that way. Because there are several moments where they do lean a little bit into slapstick, and it's just enough that I kind of giggle. There's a really nice moment where their offices have got like glass paneling, so they're all looking over, and he and the bank manager look over at the old man who he believes is going to manage rob the bank. And then when he leaves like a nose smudge on the glass, and he just stops and rubs it, and then leaves. I'm like, just little moments like that are actually kind of funny, and it always felt like the right side of that, which was good. So yeah, I actually enjoyed this episode, but it always felt like, say, I was waiting for the sort of the other shoe to drop. Like a lot of these episodes usually have a slightly sort of like darker undertone, or there's like a bit of a, you know, so in this, like, you know, yes, he hears that his boss is having an affair and he uses it sort of to blackmail him, but for good ends. Mm-hmm. And it's when he finds out about the woman that that he, you know, that has feelings for him, like he never takes advantage of it. If anything, like he uses it to help her help him. Mm-hmm. So it's all good. And so I was waiting for that darker moment, and it sort of comes with the old man wanting to rob the bank. Now, if I think if that had been done today, he would be like, you know, mass shooter.
The potential mass shooter.
Yeah, sure. I think that would be the moment. He'd be like, you know, he's like, I can come in, I can lock the doors. You know, first I'll take out the guard. Like that was where, you know, maybe that's just my pest, but that's where my head went. I was like, if this was done now, mass shooter.
Well, what's funny about that is I have had so many conversations with friends who are just frustrated about their jobs. And they're like, I don't know how comfortable I am saying this over the phone, but I have fantasies of, you know, and like, yeah, and obviously these are like the most peaceful people. It's absolutely not going to happen. But I think that that's really interesting, because I really like that old man. And I think that all of those examples of reading thoughts sort of get at human nature in one way or another. And so I really like the idea in a more conventional writer that old man would be a robber and he'd be a hero for preventing a robbery. And instead, the moral of the story is, yeah, you read people's thoughts, but people have a lot of thoughts that they don't act on. And yes. I love that idea. And you rarely hear that in these kinds of movies. And so often when you have a mass shooter, obviously, here in America, that's a daily occurrence virtually. But we have this discussion of like, how did people not know? And one thing and that's legitimate, and we need to do a better job of preventing that any way we can. Having said that, sometimes it's like he wrote dark poetry about killing people. I wrote dark poetry about killing people. Yeah. A lot of people, wrote dark poetry about killing people in their teens. They didn't go on to do it for real. And so how do you have a system that understands that and understands that those thoughts are not, we don't want to go into 1984 sort of thought policing,
yes.
sort of
thing. Yeah.
And this old man has those thoughts. He's not a bad guy.
But I do like the scene when he's sort of like, because they ask him to empty his bag out and there's nothing in there. There's like a pair of socks and a book or something. But when he confronts like the guy who can read people's thoughts, when he actually sort of he confronts him later on, and he actually says like, oh no, you're right, like and if anything, I'm a coward, that's the thing that stopped me. Yeah, I've thought that for the last sort of like 15 of those 20 years that I've worked here, but I've never act on it. Like, it's just a fantasy. Of course, everyone has that. And so you're right. I kind of like that they actually sort of tie it off with that bow. And he's not stigmatized for having had those thoughts. He just sort of, the guy goes, you're right. Sort of like, it's just one of those things. He has a job that's a drudgery. And so he, alleviates it with these thoughts of like, I could go into the bank and I could fill my pockets and I could do this.
And also he knows he's never going to be rich.
Yeah.
There's no real opportunity for promotion. He's an old guy who sits in this undesirable position and has sat there for 20 years and sort of knows what his life is going to be. And even though this is still the 60s, it's not like, today with, if you're not rich and driving a Lambo, you failed at life, sucker. I'm going to throw urine from my Lambo at you, they haven't gotten into that crazy kind of capitalism yet. But I mean, still, he knows that that's a sort of acceptable but very mediocre life. And the American dream, maybe has happened for him or is impossible at this point. But there's anxiety there. And I love what you said. I was so focused on how those thoughts were normal.
Yeah.
I love what you say about how he's not stigmatized for them, that they have this really frank conversation. And that it seems that even in this lighthearted episode, it's so brilliantly written. And it's so there's such humanitarianism underneath it that we can still learn from.
Yeah, totally. And that's why I said this is actually, I think, like one of the solid episodes. Because again, like you said, this guy, the bank teller, the center of this, he clearly has like a moral compass. Because even when he does hear the thoughts of the woman, his other employee, his colleague that has feelings for him, like there are those that would then use that, as you said, that film sort of like What Women Want. That you could take advantage of that. And he doesn't. If anything, he's a bit sort of like, he uses it to put her at her ease, sort of, again, like, it's sort of like he has to convince her that it's true. But, there would be people that are like, that's an invasion. Like, it's an invasion of our privacy and our private thoughts. But he never intends it for that to be the purpose. So, like, there's a version of this story, and I actually think we're going to get to a version of that soon enough, being given a gift and then just taking advantage of it. And this is not that. Like, it's sort of like, it's constantly that thing of, well, I now have this information. What do I do with it?
Yeah, and it is a sort of moral universe, right? I mean, it's nice, you know. I mean, it's, we've talked about this, you know, in the season one with Willowsby and other stuff. There is this nice, very kind of American Midwestern, old school Superman-esque, like, you know, most people are good people. And I don't know if that's really true, but I mean, I love that in Twilight Zone, you see the pettiness of people. I mean, you see the car that almost hits him, and the guy says, "Gee, sorry, mister," but his thoughts are like, "You stupid fool, you know, why you're delaying my day." And so you see that this, the petty dishonesty of people, but you also see the genuine goodness of people. And I love what you say about how he doesn't take advantage of Helen. And it seems to me, whether it's our superheroes or what women want, I mean, today it seems like that seems almost antiquated that somebody would not instantly abuse people.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned like what women want, but there's also sort of like Bruce Almighty, you know, sort of like any film where someone is given that power, like the instant response is to take advantage of it. And again, but that's human nature. I can't say I wouldn't. I'm not, you know, I'm not saying I'm morally perfect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this does present it as sort of like, you know, what's the best way I can deal with this? The only moral gray area is when he blackmails his boss by saying like, "Well, I know about your affair and going off to do this." Or was it? I don't know if it's like Niagara Falls or Las Vegas, wherever they're going to go. But I know you're off to do this, you know, with your mistress. And if you know, however, it tells me what a different age this is at the start when you see the bank teller having a conversation with his mistress. And he's like, "Well, I can't leave my wife." Can you imagine the headlines? You know, senior bank official leaves wife for dancer. And I'm like, who gives a monkey about some sort of like bank manager? Like, it's a different times. Must have been, you know.
Yeah, I still am a little dubious that would, you know, make the headlines. I mean, obviously, this is a relatively
small town. If it was a small town, maybe.
Well, right. Or if alternatively, or it's still a very conservative culture, but like he's the head of Morgan Stanley or something. I mean, this is a relatively small branch. It's in a big city, but it's not like, you know, do you know what that guy managing, you know, that several million dollar bank is? Nobody notices a bank that's got reserves like that. But this thing about the moral aspect, I mean, I also want to bring in the thing with Helen. And there is a kind of, while I praise this episode and you praise this episode, there is this kind of sexism there of how Helen is so sweet and he doesn't take advantage of her, but she is presented as just the love interest and she is quite content to help him and help him achieve, not be fired. She's very focused on helping his dreams. We never find out what makes her tick or what her dreams are, except she loves him and wants him to keep his job. And I think that obviously that sort of sexist culture might play into the whole mistress thing.
Yeah, well, it does. Well, one of the things, we'll go back to this, we'll talk about Helen. One of the things I like about this show, and we'll talk about, I think, there's a couple of episodes as we go through them, I actually think this is truly true, is the casting. And how sort of honest or sort of like, you know, how it's sort of, there's certain people casting things. Now, Helen, the woman who plays Helen, you know, she's not unattractive in any way, but she is, let's say, relatively plain. Mm-hmm. But they've played that, you know, they've chosen her, but she's still a genuinely nice person. But there's a scene at the beginning where sort of our protagonist is able to read her mind, and he sees her as a lovely person. He has some sort of a level of admiration for her already. But when he talks to that sort of other guy in the office, and he makes some sort of comment about her, you know, he says, like, you know, I don't know what it was. Outwardly, he says about, you know, "Oh yeah, she's a, you know, stunner," or whatever, or something. He says something, but then internally is like, no, basically sort of like, you know, could we get anyone more plain in the office or whatever? And so you say this thing about the sexist approach, but like that sort of, I think, still exists. But it was interesting as well that plays up. But like she this is going to sound really horrible, but she knows her role within the hierarchy of that bank. So the social structure of that bank, she's almost like accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I have this role. I've got to put up with this crap. That part and parcel of this.
Yeah. Well, and it would be a very different show, and we wouldn't expect it. I don't, you know, obviously you and I tend to agree. It's not fair to put the whole weight of the entire culture in 1962 on an episode of The Twilight Zone. But, I mean, one could think about a very different show in which she's got fantasies of robbing the bank and thinks, yes. You know, this whole sexist thing, like, you know, I love this guy. He won't even notice me. They mock me for being plain. I have no promotional possibilities here because no woman's ever going to be made manager of anything. You know, sometimes I just want to take an AK.
Yeah. You know, I mean, this is post McCarthy, but like, you know, you could even have that thing of sort of like someone's having communist thoughts. Like, you know, that'd have been interesting. I don't think Serling or the show would have gone there, but like, you know, I like this idea though. This theme of sort of like, I have this information. What do I then do with it?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of comes up. And as you say, we'll get to some of this, but it comes to look a bit of a wholesome ending. Like, you know, he does use the information for the right purpose. Because one of the things he has pointed out is that someone who's been given a loan is going to use that loan to then gamble and they lose all the money. and that is then brought to bear. And so he is then sort of like, you know, because he's been fired for being basically a bit of a lunatic around the office.
Well, and losing that account.
Yes, the guy walks out in disgrace because he won't give him the money. But it finds out he has just lost, like, you know, several £1,000 on the horses or whatever. So he gets his job back. He also gets, but then he uses that information sort of.
It's a little convenient you find that out the same day, right?
Yes.
Like, oh, we've got an emergency telegram about one of our applications for a loan, you know?
Yeah, it works well.
It's okay.
Yes,
I mean,
I'm fine with it because of the sort of the format of the show. It's sort of, I get what you're saying, and I actually thought about it a little bit when I watched it. I was like, well, that's easy, but
yeah.
But then he obviously uses that information. This, oh, you can have your job back, and it's actually. But the thing is, this is the interesting bit. Like you say, he's not the one that pushes for his promotion. He is, but it's only off the back of Helen saying, like, you know, well, everyone knows that he's the one that really runs this department. He should be running loans and whatever it's called, loans and acquisitions, whatever. Da, 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 da. And so he pushes for that. He gets it. But then he sort of falls back on the sort of like, well, I know about you and your mistress. And so, you know, I want this office. I want that. And then he sort of says about having the old guy being sent on a round trip to Bermuda sort of and moving his desk. And so it's all been used for good purposes, but still blackmail.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel okay with it.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, you know, I mean, right. I'm having an affair. You know, own up to it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you say it's all good purposes. I don't know if it's all good purposes. I mean, obviously we are left to believe that he deserves the promotion. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he basically gets what he deserves, but he gets it through clearly unethical means. I love that he thinks to help the old man, you know,
yes.
and ask for this thing. But he doesn't ask for a raise, right? I mean, he's not permanently changed. He's just given this old man, like, congratulations on sojourning through 20 years you know, the coal mines. You know, we're going to give you an all-expense-paid weekend at Disneyland. You know, then it's right back to the coal mines for you, buddy.
Here's your pick back again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a token gesture, isn't it? But it works because, like you say, he's not selfish. He is quite selfless in much of this. But then the episode obviously ends. You see the penny get knocked over, and it's sort of like, you know, that's he's cleared of it.
And his powers, yeah.
Yes, but he's with Helen like that, you know, and they go off, and it's sort of like they're able to, you know, this it's a stepping stone in this new life. I like this episode. Like, I found this to be wholesome. It's a nice episode. Nice is it sounds awful to say anything. It's nice, but. It's a nice episode. It's a good episode. I think it's solidly written and it's performed well. And I actually enjoyed this as a really good episode. What were your final thoughts?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I enjoy it. It's not going to be on anyone's list of top 10 episodes, but It's probably above average slightly. And for Twilight Zone, that's very good. It's certainly a nice amusement. And it does raise these kinds of questions. And it's enjoyable. You know, it's one of these sort of like, all right, let's spend 22 minutes playing this out. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thought experiment, as you said. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed. And you know, you've spent only a little bit more than a penny to hear our thoughts on this. But I hope it's been worthwhile, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. And you can continue to enjoy our trek through the Twilight Zone, and we'll talk to you again on the next episode.